my collaborators Arijit Haldar, Eric Sorensen, and Arun Paramakanti. In it, we looked at the Kagome lattice, which is this star-shaped lattice, and it's highly geometrically frustrated. That makes it nice because it's a playground for spin liquid states, which are ground states of spin systems, which not show ordering even at t goes to zero. It was already known from some previous numerical work that if you look at the chiral Hamiltonian, which is a spin Hamiltonian which has a triple product of spins, that the ground state is the so-called chiral spin liquid, which breaks time reversal symmetry. So we wanted to ask what kind of interactions do you need to add to the system in order for it to order? So we found that the simplest interaction you can add is the Heisenberg interaction across the bow ties of this lattice. The reason is the other Heisenberg interactions are frustrated, and through a variety of numerical techniques like Schwinger fermion mean field theory, spin wave theory, and even small system exact diagonalization, we indeed found that the system transitions from this spin liquid state to an ordered state at some critical value. That's that, and depending on the sign of this critical value, you either transition into the octahedral state with the spins point towards the vertices of an octahedron or the XYZ order. So yeah, if this sounds interesting, please feel free to come and have a chat in the atrium.
Hello, good afternoon, my name is Daniel. In sort of rare earth metallic systems, there's both conduction electrons and localized local moments from the 4F electrons. And these local moments in certain systems, if there's a sufficient symmetry, for example, a tetrahedral symmetry can give you four degenerate crystal field ground states. And such is the case in this cerium compound, cerium 3, palladium 20, silicon 6. There's this gamma 8 quartet crystal field ground state. So this ground state hosts numerous multipolar moments, three dipoles, five quadrupoles, and seven octopoles. And what we're studying here is as you tune the magnetic field, experimentalists have found two sequential Fermi surface reconstructions, wherein the local moment states are absorbed partially into the Fermi surface at the first transition, and then the rest of them are absorbed into the Fermi surface at the second transition. And in our work, we studied this model. We constructed a model for the system and studied it with some renormalization group techniques, and found some RG fixed points, which give order parameters which are consistent with the recent experiments. So if you think this is interesting, please come by and check it out. And this work I also did with Sang-un Han, who's just, thank you.
Hello, my name's Andrew Hardy. This is some work I did with my supervisor, Arun Paramakanti, and his recent postdoc, Arjit Haldar. And we were motivated by there's some experimental results in both like iron-based superconductors and twisted bilayer graphene that show these non-Fermi liquid normal state properties with like linear resistivity that then transition into broken rotational symmetry while maintaining translational symmetry, which is called pneumatic order. And so we're both interested in what are exactly solvable models of this. And probably everyone here knows the canonical, exactly solvable non-Fermi liquid model is something called the Sachev-Yeh-Kataev model. And so we're also interested in how universal this model is or what sort of instabilities it has. So we constructed a model of polarization symmetry breaking. So we have two SYK dots that have some kind of population imbalance upon lowering temperature. And so by constructing a lattice version of this model, we found some interesting phenomenology where there's a change in the type of transition based on the hopping in the lattice. So you can see here the polarization changes from in the first order versus second order transition. And you can see this in compressibility, that it both in the compressibility plot, and it's too small, but if you came to my poster, you could see in the spectral functions, this first order transition becomes an insulator, whereas the second order transition stays metallic. And then another advantage of SYK models as compared to like other kind of DMFT-like things is that we can do really nice exact conductivity measurements. So we can see some nice Curie-Weiss-like susceptibilities in the resistivity as you approach this pneumatic transition. You're all good. With induced strain. So we have some results that also connect to some of these iron nictides in terms of the elastoresistivity. So if any of that is interesting to you, or you have something you'd like to tell me, I'll have a poster at the atrium. Thank you.
All right, so hi everyone. My name is Felix. So this is a poster that I'm co-presenting with Emily Zhang. So as expressed in the previous talk, you know, there's been a lot of interest in actually realizing the Kitaev model, since it's an exactly solvable model that's been predicted to host non-abelian anions that could be useful for topological quantum computing. But in actual candidate material, there's always non-Kitaev interaction, which actually lead you far from the ideal Kitaev limit. So it always leads to long-range order. And as a possible solutions to these issues, it's been proposed that cobaltate, so 3D7 systems, could actually be much closer to the ideal Kitaev limit. So there's been a lot of excitement in recent years. And one of the leading cobaltate materials is this BCEAO that's been the subject of many speculations, such that it's potentially the most ideal Kitaev material up to date. And working in collaboration with Colin Broholm, which is a neutron scatterer from Johns Hopkins University, we actually had the opportunity of testing these claims. So, you know, is BCEAO the most ideal Kitaev material up to date, or is it a simple, more conventional magnet? Well, you can come to see our poster to find out. All right.
Hi, everyone. My name is Daniel Huerga. And in my poster, we are providing a variational quantum simulation, dimensional frustrated magnets, and in particular, valence one solid phases. It is built upon a cluster Gutzwiller ansatz, which, as you may know, is equivalent to just solving a single cluster embedded in a magnetic, in a self-consistent magnetic mean field. And as it has been said this morning, classically, these clusters that we can attain is around 30 spins. So we are providing, aiming at overcoming this limitation, we are providing this hybrid scheme where we are generating the wave function of the cluster via a parameterized quantum circuit and then looping over with a classical optimizer. And we benchmark on the J1, J2 Heisenberg antiferromagnet, which is a long debated, which is a paradigmatic model of frustrated quantum magnetism with this paradigmatic valence bond solid phase in between. And we find that the convergence within this long-range order phases is pushed by the mean fields, and therefore we can access these valence bond solid phases and open this route towards synthesizing this kind of valence bond solids with the Lagrangian circuit. Looking forward.
Hello everyone, my name is Arnab. My presentation is on counterintuitive yet efficient regimes of computation in SPT ordered chains. So the main question I want to answer with my poster is the following. Given a short-range entangled symmetric state, how can you best use it for computation using just local measurements on that state? So this is kind of the language of measurement-based quantum computation, where you start with a initial resource state, and then the only operation you are allowed to perform is just local measurements on that state, And if your initial state is kind of the right state, then you can simulate universal unitary evolution using that. So the canonical resource for this purpose is the so-called cluster state. But in the recent decades, people have wondered about other kind of resources. It turns out certain symmetric perturbations to the cluster state still retains the capability of computation for the cluster state. So, but there is one problem. So when we try to perform rotations using these perturbed states, you always encounter some decoherence in the system, like some logical decoherence. And the way to deal with this in the standard manner is to kind of take the rotation angle and divide it into smaller parts and separate the rotation sites out. Now, these rotation sites can be treated independently, and you can show that those rotations, like this, reduces the decoherence. But in our work, we show that if you make the rotations actually dependent on each other, so make the rotations actually the separation between the rotation sites close to the correlation length of the system, that is actually more efficient, and that's the most efficient way of doing computation. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you, and I'll hopefully talk about that with you in the poster session. Thanks.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Vedangi, and I worked on this with a former postdoc of Marcel, Sayak Dasgupta, and with Marcel's insights. So what my poster is about Majorana-Mudd's in a hybrid vortex. So when you come visit my poster, I will explain what a hybrid vortex is. It's basically when you have a superconducting vortex on a superconducting layer, and you have a ferromagnetic vortex, which is a vortex of spins on the ferromagnetic layer. And together, they form a kind of bound state such that if you try to separate them, they try to come and sit on top of one another. So that kind of bound state is what we are calling a hybrid vortex. And yeah, because it's the title of my poster, spoiler alert, yes, we do find Majorana-Mudd's in that, such that you see a zero bias peak in the local density of states. And you will see that there is a Majorana-Mudd, which is localized at the core of the vortex, and there is a Majorana-Mudd, which is localized at a ring around the vortex. And when you plot the wave functions, you see that separation very, very clearly. And this begs the question, how good is this Majorana-Mudd? Of course, like since I wrote a paper on it, it is very, very good. And it's, yeah, so across various parameters for different sizes of magnetic vortices, you find a Majorana-Mudd over there. And what is interesting is that in all of these plots, you see that I've highlighted a ring. So where is this precious ring coming from? So it's due to an emergent magnetic field that comes from a gap. So an emergent magnetic field, which comes from a gauge potential. It opens up a gap from the vortex to the ring, and that's the topological phase. So if you want to know more about it, please come visit me at my poster.
All right. Hello, everyone. My poster is on investigating computational phases of matter using NIST devices. Now, as we're probably hopefully familiar with our experiences in everyday life, when we look at something like water, the properties of liquid water is not something that is confined to a specific temperature or pressure, but rather it's a property of the entire phase. And now if you're willing to take an extremely large leap of faith with me here, the same thing holds of quantum states and their capability to harness quantum computation. Specifically, it turns out that the capability for a state to harness quantum computation can be classified based on the language of symmetry-protected topological phases. And in particular here, we can consider, say, the cluster phase centered around the canonical resource state known as the cluster state. And all states within this phase are a universal tool for quantum computation. Now, of course, a phase isn't something that's defined in finite systems, which most of our work takes place in. So recently, our group has developed formalism to better answer the question of how do we characterize computational power in such finite systems. It turns out that one can characterize computational power through the measurement of a computational order parameter. And not only that, but as Arnab discussed, there exists ways to carry out computation most efficiently within this finite regime. So in our work, we try to showcase these state-of-the-art techniques on physical noisy intermediate-scale quantum devices. Now, as the name NIST might suggest, these devices are very bad. So we have to think of cool tricks to play such that we can actually see and showcase these results. And if that's something you'd be curious about, please come talk to me in the atrium. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dre. So this is work with my supervisor, Andrew Porter. So we know that traditionally topological phases of matter are defined for gap systems, right? So the gap can protect the robustness of topological properties. Recent studies have shown that you could also have topological properties in gapless systems. And also the edge mode there cannot be realized in gapped systems. That's the name. We have the name intrinsically gapless SPT. In some of the models studied before, basically the key feature is that you have a gapless sector and a gapped sector. So in this gapless sector, the system is anomalous symmetric action. So this emergent anomaly IR can protect the gaplessness. But the anomaly is lifted by the UV degrees filling. So that the system to start. So this is an example. This is like a 1D chain with basically two type of spins at each site. So denoted all spin and spin. So the features are that so the low energy sector is described by a gapless loading, which has an anomaly, but system itself has a non-anomalous exact Z4 symmetry. So this emergent Z2 anomaly in the IR sector can protect the gaplessness. And also, if you just study, you can find out that there's a can do theoretical analysis to find out this two ground state degeneracy. Okay, so more systematically, we can understand this gapless SPD from a group cohomology point of view. So we can start with an incohomology, which is characterized by a cocycle. Study like Diedemann unit system is like HD plus two. And also with a group extension. With this help of this extension, we can factorize this cocycle as like a cocycle and a two cocycle. Together they form a. Okay, so we can construct a lattice model in any dimension with this feature first. It has like exact gamma symmetry, so full symmetry. But the IR gapless sector has gamma, and which is an. But we still have this UV symmetry, like it's still there. If you add this action in IR sector, realize that it actually pumps a lower dimensional. So since it's an exact symmetry, realize that H must be our work basically automatically understanding of this SPD.
Bilayers of cuprate superconductors. Now we can go beyond bilayers and look at multilayers and see what happens there. The first simplest thing is the trilayer. And here, notice that we have more twist degrees of freedom. In a bilayer, you just have one twist angle. Here, you have more. So what you can imagine now is if you have a middle layer that's fixed and you have top and bottom layer, it can either be twisted opposite each other or in the same direction. That gives us two kinds of twists, chiral and alternating twist. Now, the chiral twist is very similar. Twisted close to 45 degrees, have a gap opening up in the spectrum. Now, the alternating case is more interesting. Here, you see that the phase difference. Is reason for that is there is always a gapless Dirac code.
Hi, everybody. My name is Joe Sullivan, and my poster is about floating codes with twists. So basically, last year, Ha and Hastings introduced this new interesting kind of quantum code that is inspired by the Kataya of Honeycomb model. And so, you know, our setting is qubits on a honeycomb lattice. And so, what we do, we institute a schedule of measurements on this lattice, right? And so we color them red, green, and blue. And so basically what we're going to do is in the first round, we're going to measure all of these two-body operators, which connect these replicates. In the next round, we're going to do all the green ones. And then in the third round, we're going to do all the blue ones. And then we repeat the cycle. Check what actually happens to the state you get after doing these measurements. It turns out that after the red round, we get a toric code. Basically, half the qubits turn into a product state, half the qubits form like a toric code eigenstate, where the m excitations live on the red plaquettes and the e excitations live on the blue and the green. And then we go to the next round, and this toric code moves around in Hilbert space, and now the green plaquettes are. Get this cycling of a instantaneous toric code state as we go through these measurement rounds. And okay, what's good about toric code? Well, it encodes logical qubits, and so it turns out that these toric codes move around, but also the logical information that is stored in these toric codes is evolved in a way that is recoverable. Great. So that's the story that was established by Ha and Hastings. And so, what the main part of this poster is about is. Have this understanding in terms of toric codes. One thing you can do in a toric code is you can introduce twist defects, right? So some line that cuts across your system that permutes a e to an m particle, and you can encode more logical qubits by introducing twist defects. So along with collaborators, we have worked out how to adapt this measurement schedule of these locate codes to add arbitrarily many. Also, we can generalize it to qubits. So yeah, if you're interested, please step by my poster.
Hi, everyone. So today I'm going to be talking about some work we've been doing at IQC and the Vector Institute in Toronto on trying to characterize how to optimize the realistic function. So we're evolving Hamiltonian that's driving some field couplings that we hope to parameterize with really exceptional precision to accomplish some task. Maybe we're trying to prepare a quantum state or represent some maybe an example would be an NMR system where you have some magnetic fields and you can control these time-dependent magnetic fields on these nuclei. And depending how you control those fields, you can implement some quantum computing task. So there's been a lot of work done in this quantum optimal control problem in really the ideal setting where your parameters could take kind of any values and you're not constrained by maybe experimental constraints. So we're trying to implement a lot of pretty non-trivial experimental feasibility where you may have bounds on your parameters, maybe your amplitudes of these magnetic fields are bounded, maybe your boundary conditions, maybe also have a lot of noise as your system interacts with its environment. And you have some dephasing or depolarizing noise. So we want to see kind of how our optimization is characterized by these new constraints. One thing that we can tune is how long we evolve our system for, or maybe our depth of this circuit representation. So we want to see kind of this interplay of the depth and also these noise effects. So one effect that we do know in the ideal case is that there's this overparameterization, where if you have enough parameters in your system, you probably converge maybe exponentially quickly to your fidelities for your target, maybe this target state you're trying to accomplish or an algorithm. And we see in the case of constraint optimization, you can still converge exponentially quickly, and you see these overparameterized effects. But once we add noise to our system, there's some kind of critical depth that occurs where our noise is kind of accumulated catastrophically, and we can no longer achieve really good fidelities. I was really interested in studying this kind of critical point more, and maybe also looking at scaling of other observables like entanglement, things like that, around this critical point. So yeah, come check out the poster for more. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. So the work I'm going to talk today is about entanglement in monitored quantum circuits. It is a work collaborated with Zhi, Tim C, and Benny. Monitored quantum circuits is a kind of many-body quantum dynamics composed of both local unitary operations and the local projective measurements. In this work, we find that entanglement dynamics in monitored quantum circuits is very fast, in a sense that they are not bounded by any speed. More precisely, we find that in certain cases, a local starting from an unentangled state, a local region can get entangled with a neighbor, and the size of this neighbor grows superlinearly with time. More precisely, it grows as t to the 3 over 2. In addition, we find that an original local piece of quantum information can spread and decay in such system. And the spreading is indeed also superlinear with the same exponent, t to the 3 over 2. If that sounds interesting and you would like to know more, please come to my poster. We can discuss more. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for your time and attention, and thank you very much for staying tuned. Now, my name is Weichen Ye, and in this poster, I'm going to talk about UV-IR mixing in marginal Fermi liquid. This is based on a joint work with Professor Sung-Sik Lee and Dr. Liu Junzhou here at Parameter. And the talk concerns non-Fermi liquid, or a specific class of non-Fermi liquid called marginal Fermi liquid. And they are central to our understanding of superconductivity behavior as well as strange matter. You are going to probably hear more about it in coming days of the conference. And in order to have a theoretical control of the model, usually we couple the we have a theoretical model which couples the Fermi surface to some collective gapless modes, especially gauge boson, which will concern us the most in this post. And moreover, usually to do some perturbative RG calculation, we decompose the Fermi surface into different patches, and we hope that different patches do not talk to each other. Yet we see that some fishy thing going on, which suggests that when we tune the size of the patch lambda y, there are some gapless modes that are marked red here that are included into or out of this gapless degrees of freedom are included into or out of when we tune lambda y. In contrast, in ordinary quantum field theory, when we tune out of lambda, there are no gapless modes touched. Therefore, it is potential that such model will suffer from UV-IR mixing, which suggests that the infrared physics is sensitive to the details of the UV description. Here, the size of the patch lambda 1. And it is not shown in some lower loop calculation, but we do some careful higher loop calculation, and we indeed show that such UVR mixing exists in the patch theory description. And it suggests that to capture the low energy physics, perhaps we need some new theoretical framework. Possibly it gives more, a little bit more motivation to the functional renormalization group method that we'll discuss by Professor Sung-Sik tomorrow. Thank you very much. And please come to my poster.
Eventually, there we go. Sorry about that.
Hi, I'm Joseph, and I'm going to talk to you about some work that I started with some collaborators back at the University of Oxford, where I was doing my PhD, and that I've finished up here now that I've moved to the Flatiron Institute in New York. And the essential idea of this work is to sort of take a very abstract view of the quantum many-property problem and take sort of your favorite spin Hamiltonian and define it over some graph where the vertices are where the spins lie and the edges represent which spins interact with each other, and then ask the question, what is the physics of the model when we place the absolute minimum constraints on the underlying graph? So if we start and just say, let's just pick a graph at random from every possible graph which has L vertices, then we can use some statistical methods to prove that the free energy density has to converge to the free energy density of the complete graph, so an all-to-all model. And then you can ask, okay, then what constraint can I introduce on top of this that stops the free energy density converging to that of a single giant spin? And you can show that that constraint is basically that the graph has a non-trivial cut. And in that case, if you pick the graph at random from those graphs, you would end up with a system whose physics is just described by two collective spins. And if you keep going, you end up with basically two possible exceptions to this, which is one, either your graph is sparse and the number of connections compared to the number of possible connections vanishes, and you end up with things like 2D models where many-body physics is very much known to exist. Or the other exception you can go to is that your graph is completely inhomogeneous, and it's still dense, but the environment for each spin is completely different. And so this is kind of like a constructive route towards showing where complexity lies in the many-body problem. And in order to reinforce our analytical results, we use matrix product state calculations, because we can show that on these kind of dense graphs, the entanglement entropy is always bounded as the log of the partition size. And so actually, you can use a matrix product state with a bond dimension proportional to the system size to reach sort of spins on graphs of several hundred sites and actually show these analytical results emerging. So if this sounds like something you want to know more about, then come to my poster. Thank you.